And we're holding on some of Zion Amr Aleph, third line. And we're in the middle of discussing the issues of Shinui Maisa and Shinui Hashem and other such things. Whether what are the details when those cause that now the Ganav acquires the object itself, and now he only has to repay the value of it. We talked about, for example, a person stole a korban from somebody else. Whether there we talked about actually there's yush. Is yush by itself enough to be koina? Do we say? What about, for example, we talked about a case where he stole a piece of leather and cut around the edges of it to make it into an itzba, as we talked about yesterday, a picnic blanket or a saddle cover, according to the different opinions. The last thing we talked about was, take, for example, a person steals a beam and builds it into a house. Chakonas chachamim, he doesn't have to tear down the house to return the actual beam. Now, on the face of it, the beam has a different name now because we said now it's part of a ceiling, and yet midaraisa, he would have had to return it, implying that Shinui Hashem is not enough to be koneh. And so Rabbi Yosef had given an answer. The reason is because there's no Shinui Hashem. Even when it's built into the ceiling, it's still called a beam. So now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Zera Omar, Rabbi Zera gives a different answer. The difference is Shinui Achozo Lebri Yosei, when it comes to a shinui which is reversible, as far as the change of name, where Reb Zera is saying there's not a change to the actual size or shape or whatever of the thing itself. The beam was built into the building as it is. The only thing you're arguing is that the name has changed, that now it became part of the roof. But this is shinui achozo lebriyosa. This is a reversible shinui, because if you do take down the roof and then you have then the beam will still be called a beam again. Its name hasn't been changed permanently. It's only been changed temporarily as long as this beam is part of the ceiling. So therefore, Abzeda says when it comes to a shinui hashem, that kind of thing where it's a change of name and where it's reversible, loy habit shinui, then that's not going to be considered a shinui as far as the Gazlan acquiring it. So that is why midaraisa, in fact, he wouldn't own the beam and he would have to tear down the house and return the actual beam, and only midrabanan are we saying he shouldn't have to in order to mipnei takonas hashavim, to make it easier for him to do tshuva. So in other words, when we had the case at the end of the previous Amud, when we had the case of a piece of leather that he turned into an itzba, so then it's never going to go back to being called just a plain piece of leather. It's now called an itzba, or an Aramaic abarzin. It's never going to go back to be called called just a skin. As opposed to over here, where the beam is built into the roof, and then you take down the roof, and then eventually it goes back to being called a beam. So according to Rashi, it comes out that the fact is that if you had just thought about the itzba alone, not did a maisa, then that would be another example of what Reb Zera is saying over here. Maybe as long as it's together with yush, then it would be koina. Tosfos elsewhere discusses and says that and talks about that point that if you have a shinui hashem and you have yush, that might be enough to be koina. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "V'shinui Hashem she'ina chozel Rabbi Yosef mi habi shinui." So you're telling me, according to Rabbi Yosef, what are you saying? Rabbi Yosef is saying the only reason why midaraisa you would have to return the beam is because it's because there's no shinui Hashem in the first place, because it's still called a beam even when it's built into the ceiling, as opposed to, according to Rabbi Zeira, we said it is a shinui, but it's a reversible shinui. So it comes out, according to Rabbi Yosef, who disagrees with Rabbi Zeira's answer, it comes out that according to Rabbi Yosef, even though it's a reversible shinui, if there was a shinui Hashem, then that would be enough to be koina. And the only reason it doesn't buy the beam is because there's no shinui Hashem at all. The question is, Vaharet Siner, consider the case of a pipe as far as the halachas of mikveh. originally, before you put it in, before you build it into the ground, it's called a ktsitsta. It's called just a branch, a piece of wood. Now, rather not before you put it in place, but before you make it, before you hollow out to make it into a pipe. You start out with a branch of a tree, which is just a piece of a tree, which is just called ktsitsta. Vahashta tsinoda. Now it gets a new name. It's called tsinoda, a pipe. Vitanya, and we learn in a brisa, tsinur shachakoko lasoif kavoy. If you have a pipe that you first hollowed out, you first made it into a pipe, and then afterwards, which means that you made it into a keli, or a soif kavoy, and then afterwards you attached it to and then you attached it to the ground. So it's still considered a keli because it was a full keli. It was a full-fledged keli before you ever attached it to the ground. Therefore, poisos a mikveh. So therefore, it passels a mikveh. Now you have although some discussion about this. In particular, there's Rashbam and Tosfos in Bava Basra, where it also talks about this topic. Where they discuss, what do we mean that passels it? Do we mean if three logim of water pass through it, where we know that a mikveh of less than 40 saw is passeled by having drawn water, by having three logim of drawn water brought into it? We have Mishnayos in Perek Yeshmal and Samikveh that discuss that point. So do we mean since this thing is a keli now, so therefore if three logim of water go through it into a mikveh which has less than 40 saw, then the mikveh is going to be posel? Or do we mean that only if the entire mikveh was piped in, only if all the water in the mikveh was piped in through that pipe, then it's going to be posel because now it's all mayim shorvi? Tosfos there in Bava Basra discusses a considerable point here. The Gemara is going to mention briefly, and Tosfos discusses there in at some length what details of the water supply of a mikveh are daraisa, have to be done daraisa, versus which ones are derabanan. We'll talk about it in a second. Anyway, the point is, so here you have, though, this thing was a keli to begin with, before you ever attached it to the ground. So therefore, it passels the mikveh, either again with the three logim or with all the water going through it. But, continues the braisa, if he did the other way around, first he attached it to the ground and then he hollowed it out. So it never was a keli before it was attached to the ground. So now it's considered part of the ground. So therefore, it's now not considered a keli. Any poisolus a mikveh, then it doesn't pass all the mikveh even if the water passes through it. Tosfos actually discusses over here also the point, what kind of pipe are we talking about? If it's just a regular straight pipe, it wouldn't necessarily passel anything anyway, because how can that be considered shovim? The water is not drawn in it at all. So are we talking about Tosfos says where it has a rim around all four sides? are we talking about maybe you have a wider area in it that you put in, that you carved out in it in order to keep, like this, when the water is flowing through it, the water has various sediments and particulates and whatever, suspended in it. So you want to have an area, a wider area in the pipe where those can settle out. So Tosfos discusses maybe it would be considered to be a keli because of those grounds. There are other possibilities that Rishonim bring up that maybe we're talking about. For example, it does have walls, but you have water flows through a hole at one end and then flows out the hole at the other end. So we're talking about it does have actual walls. We don't just mean that it's a straight pipe, but we mean that it actually has walls on the beginning and on the inlet and on the outlet, and then you have holes in there that the water goes through. There's a lot of discussion about that. I mean, as far as our mikvahs nowadays, obviously they have to get water into the mikvah somehow, but because of all these considerations, they tack after use straight pipes. They use curved pipes if they have pipes that have joints in them, that have L joints in them or whatever, then it becomes a real problem, because based on what we're saying over here, those might make the water mind-shoving. Anyway, The point is, the Gemara says, "Be amat shinui Hashem milsehi." If you're telling me that shinui Hashem by itself is considered significant according to Rabbi Yosef, then afilo kovel of seif chakoke namely posel. Then shouldn't the sinner, shouldn't this pipe be posel even if he first attached it to the ground and then carved it out? Because now he's still giving it a new name. Now it becomes the name sinner. So therefore, so it should have the status of a separate kelim. Now why don't we consider it Shinri Maisa? So the David points out, because the fact is it is attached to the ground now, so therefore it's like digging a channel in the ground. But on the other hand, it has a new name now. It's called Sinner. So therefore, based on Rabbi Yosef's logic that Shinri Hashem is enough to be Kona for the Gazlan, then Shinri Hashem should also be enough that now it's considered a Keli and should pass all the mikveh equally well when it's attached to the ground before you ever made it into a Keli. And the answer is Shiny Shiva Diminded Abonin. The answer is it's different when it comes to the psul of drawn water, because that psul is only Did Abonin. Now again, here you have what do we mean as far as the Shemayim Shovim? Rashi says the point about three logim, the fact that three logim can pass a mikveh is only the fact that three logim of drawn water can pass a mikveh is only dirabon. The Rashbam says similarly in the Gemara in Bava Basra. Tosfos over there discusses at some length and says maybe not necessarily, maybe even what the Gemara means is that the whole concept of Mayim Shuvim being possible for a mikveh in the first place is only Derabbanan. According to them, maybe Midaraisa, you would completely be able to make a mikveh out of Mayim Shuvim. According to them, for example, according to that way of looking at it, let's say a swimming pool would be a perfectly good mikveh, at least Daraisa, at least. Because so what though? So what? It's all Mayim Shovim. They discuss over there that maybe the concept that forty sa of Mayim Shovim is possible for a mikveh is maybe only Dirabbanan. Tosfos has a long discussion about it over there in Bava Basra. Interesting point to note in this connection. Both the Rebbe and Rav Moshe Feinstein dealt in various places with the question. You know, we have the Midrashim and things say that children who are born from Nidus tend to be chutz benyaks and have very bad Midus and whatever. And, you know, the fact is, we see in the last few decades when you have Balei Tshuva, you have many of them are very fine Jews, and many of them, their mothers on the face of it never went to the mikveh and never kept Taras and Mishpacha before they were conceived. How does that fit with those Midrashim? Both of them talk about the idea that there may have been times when the mother did go and bathe in water somehow in such a way that it could be considered a mikveh, at least on some level. I think the Rebbe talked about, for example, that women often go swimming in the ocean, and that's considered a mikveh, even though they're wearing a bathing suit. That's fine. It's not waterproof. And then I think one of the factors that's brought in over there is, in fact, this matter that maybe, at least according to Tosfos, even a swimming pool or something like that would be, at least on a daraisa level, would be considered a valid mikveh. So that kind of thing might be enough to take away what those midrashim are saying about bnei nida. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara is saying over here, getting back to the Gemara, is that since the whole psul of Shovim, whether we mean the three logim or whether we mean the whole 40 sa, is only Dirabbanan, then therefore we're able to be makel, and we're able to say that in this case, the fact that it has a new name of Tsinner, when it got that name only after it was attached to the ground, is not going to be enough to passel the mikveh. But that's different than that we can't necessarily generalize from that to what Rabbi Yosef is saying about Shinui Hashem as far as a ganah. Well, the Gemara asks, "Yachi afilu dereisha nami." Well, in that case, if you're going to say that you're being makel because the whole concept of shuvim of three logim of 40 saw, as the case may be, is only derabbanan afilu dereisha nami, then the same thing should be true even in the pipe of the reisha, even in the case where you created the pipe first, you hollowed it out first, or made the holes in it, or whatever you did to make it into something that will transmit water, and then you attached it. And yet, the Braisa said that for that case, that it's possible. The difference is Hosim Ikatoras Kliolov Betolush, because the difference is there it has the name of a Keli while it's detached from the ground, so therefore that name Keli, that name of Tsinner, remains even after it's attached to the ground. Hocha in Toras Kliolov Betolush, whereas when it was attached to the ground and only then made into a Tsinner, then it never had the name of a Keli while it was detached, therefore the Chachamim can be maple with it, given that the whole concept of Maim Shuvim passeling a mikveh is only Dirabban. An interesting thing in this regard, by the way, is it used to always be, you're finding in shas, it was a commonplace thing that mikvahs are always cold. You had, for example, a special thing they had to do for the Kohen Gadol's mikveh on Yom Kippur is that they would heat it up for him by putting in, for example, by putting in heated iron bars in order to warm up the water, since after all, the Kohen Gadol had to tovel five times on Yom Kippur. But other than that, it was always a given that mikvahs are cold. Eventually, the Alter Rebbe came up with a method of making. Now, the problem was, how do you make a mikveh hot? The problem is that you would need some kind of keli in there. You'd need something to contain the water in order to be able to heat it up. And the problem is, of course, that you can't tovel in a keli. The Alter Rebbe came up with an invention where basically he created a type of box that can be immersed in a lake or something, where the box is not considered a keli because it has holes that are large enough for it not to be considered a keli. Then you cement it to the bottom over there, and you cement it to the bottom over there, and then that way it's like Gemara is saying over here, it doesn't become a keli until after you, because then the holes are closed up and it's considered a keli. But that only happens after it's cemented to the ground, and therefore you're able to fill it up with hot water. The water will go out the holes, of course, but enough of it will remain in there that it's possible to tovel in it. And eventually that became widely adopted, and it became an acceptable method of heating mikvahs. Nowadays, of course, since mikvahs are built in nowadays with mikvahs that are built that are purpose built in the first place, they have other ways of heating them that weren't available in the Alter Rebbe's times. But in fact, this is listed as one of the 10 zchusim of the Alter Rebbe, is that he created a method for mikvahs to be heated, and thereby made it that more women will be willing to do the mitzvah, and men for that matter, to do it for Tosfos Kedusha. Anyway, the reason I'm mentioning that is because that's another example of this kind of thing, of having something which is not a keli until it's attached to the ground, which is like what we're saying over here as far as the pipe. Okay. The Gemara says, Maisli, then. I have another contradiction against Rabbi Yosef. A Braisa says, a ganav v'hagazlan v'ha'anas, a ganav who steals things surreptitiously, as we said, who steals them in secret, v'hagazlan, or we said a gazlan is somebody who takes things openly, v'ha'anas, or an anas, which is the kind of, which is we've learned before, is also known as a chamsan, which we've learned before. He's somebody who will force somebody to sell him something, but he will pay, unlike a ganav or a gazlan who forces them, unlike a gazlan who forces them to give it and won't pay, an anas will at least pay. So all of them, Hekdesh and Hekdesh, if they declare Hekdesh, if they declare the object that they stole, if they declare it Hekdesh, it is valid Hekdesh, or Trumasan Truma, and if they take Truma, then it's valid Truma, or Masroisan Meiser, and their Meiser is valid Meiser. So what do we see? Now, on the face of it, there was no shinui Hashem, there's no shinui Maiseh, there's no shinui anything over here, and yet we're saying that their hektish is valid hektish and so forth. Now, by the way, Rashi makes the point. He says that it means v'osu lehonis. He says it's also to have hana, which would imply, in other words, that Rashi is saying we're not going to say that the animal can actually be brought as a korban, because after all, you have mitzvah ba ba'avera, which we'll talk about soon, the details of that in Tosfos. But at least that it is also bahana, because now it's considered hekdesh. The point being, in other words, that how could the ganav be makdish it? On the face of it, it's not his to be makdish. How must it be? It must be that he was koine it with yush, because there's no shini Hashem and no shinui anything over here. And yet we're saying hekdesh and hekdesh. So that shows, in other words, that it's enough, that yush all alone is enough, unlike Rabbi Yosef, who's been saying that yush by itself is not enough. You need yush plus some kind of shinui. So the answer is Amri. So they answer back, no, Hossam, Hossam ikashini Hashem. The fact is there is a change in name as well. Dimi ikra tivla v'hachta truma. For example, in the case of truma, you have previously this fruit was called tevel. Now it gets a new name called truma. And the same thing, hektish mi ikra chulin v'hashta hektish, in the same way, as far as hektish, before it was called chulin, now it's called hektish. So therefore, yes, that can be considered a different name. Now, Tosfos points out, we just said before about shinui achozo the briyosa, we just said before about when you have a reversible shinui, that it's not necessarily a shinui. And here it's reversible in the sense that he could go to a Rav to be Matur Neder on this Truma that he designated, and it would go back to being Tevel. Nevertheless, Tosfos says that's a very uncommon kind of thing to do, and therefore we're not going to consider that to be a Shinui Achoz of the Briyasa, even though technically it is. So there is some discussion about this, by the way. I mean, how exactly? I mean, so fine. We're saying that there's a name change from Tevel to Truma. But the fact is, not all of it becomes Truma. You don't give 100% of the payers as Truma. You only give a couple of percent of it. So how do you have now that? There's a Shinui Hashem on the whole thing. And also for that matter, how is he able to declare it Truma in the first place? How is he able to declare it Truma in the first place if it's not his? So as far as how he's able to do it, actually, the Rashba says it's similar to the way we had in Gittin. We had the concept called Gitte V'yod Boin Ka'achas. You can have a case where a woman acquires a get and a chotzer at the same moment, the same way over here. You can say. That the moment he's makdashit, or the moment he's makdashit, or declares it truma, or whatever, then he's also koine at the same time. So the kinyan and the shinui come at the same time. But anyway, there are various things that Achronim talk about how exactly we're talking about, because on the face of it, how is he able to declare it truma or meiser before he actually ever acquired it. And how is there a Shinui Hashem on the whole thing? So there's the Achiezer of Reb Chaim Ozer talks about, and some other Achronim talk about. One possibility would be that the Gazlan actually used these Peiros all as Truma on behalf of his own Peiros. So therefore, all of it becomes Truma. And we're saying, therefore, that you have a Shinui Hashem on the whole thing. If he were just to take Truma out of the thing itself, then it wouldn't work because the name of the Shirayim doesn't change. Reb Shimon Shkop actually had said on that there is actually, the rest of it goes from being called Tevel to being called Cholin, and Reb Chaim Ozer argues on that and says that no, it's only the change from Tevel to Truma is a Shinui Hashem and not just from Tevel to Cholin. So we have to be talking about. So he says that he's taking the Peiros that he stole, and he's using it as Truma for his own produce. And again, Shinui Hashem works, and says therefore that's good. And then there are different other Achronim talk about it. The Ur Sameach talks about a point. It could be that the other way around, the Ganav is separating Truma. It doesn't have to be the other way around. We're talking about he is Kone, the Shinui Hashem, and like the Rashba says, it comes together, and the part that becomes Truma, he's giving it on behalf of the other fruit. He doesn't need Das Bailin for that. He doesn't necessarily need that the owner consents to that, because it's almost like Zochin La'odim Shalei B'fon. And then there's lots of questions on that. So there's a lot of lumdus on this whole point over here of him being able to declare this produce truma. So here we're saying the same thing. Well, whatever it is, the same thing as far as hekdesh. Now there's Shinui Hashem. Okay. Tosfos also points out. Now you do have, by the way, there's a Kodshim she'ena chaya b'achriyosan. You have the kind of kodshim where if the animal dies or is lost or whatever, then he's not chayev to bring a different one. Then you have shinu reshus anyway. So here we're talking about where there is kodshim she'chaya b'achriyosan. So they're still considered in his reshus. Nevertheless, we can say it has a new name now, because now it's called hektish. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Amar of Chista, Amar of Yonasan, minayim l'shinui shehu koina. How do we know that a shinui acquires the gneva on behalf of the gazlan? So we had before, actually, we had on Samach Vav and Aleph, we had Rabba brought the pasuk veheishav asagzeil asher gozal. So now Rav Chista is going to bring that same pasuk, but he's going to darshan it a little bit differently. Shenema, the Hashem is Exela. The Pasuk said that you should return the stolen object. Now, the Hashem is Exela means that he has to return the stolen thing. So Matam Adlema Asher Gozal. What does it add when the Pasuk uses the word Asher Gozal, that he stole? What else? What are those two words adding? It means Im Ke'en Shegozal Yachzir. It means if it's still in the same state that it was, it didn't have any shinui in it compared to how he stole it, then Yachzir, then he has to return it as is. V'im Lav, and if not, Domim Ba'amal Boy Shalomi, then he only has to pay the value. This is basically the same thing, actually, as Rabba had said on Samach Vav Amud Aleph. So now Rav Chista is saying this as well, and the Gemara is going to get into some discussion about it. Actually, the Shita Mekubetzis brings that the discussion that the Gemara is going to have now, it could have just as well had on Rabba's statement, but since to begin with, in the Beis Medrash, it was discussed in connection with Rav Chista's statement, then therefore the Gemara brings it over here. Anyway. The Gemara asks, "What do you mean? How can you learn from Asher Gozal that? It means that you pay only if it's still the identical item and not if there was any kind of shinui? Hi, Asher Gozal, mi boilem uti gezel ovim. We need that word Asher Gozal to teach us a different din. Suppose that a person's father had stolen something, and if the father had been alive." So what happens? The Torah tells us that you have various cases of asham gzelus, where a person denies a monetary claim against him and swears falsely to it. We've talked about before where that happens, for example, with that we talked about earlier in the perek, where it happens with pikadin, for example, where the owner of the pikadin comes to pick it up and the shomer claims that it was stolen and swears falsely on that, where we say he has to pay keren v'choymesh and bring a korban asham. Here we have a similar case with Xelus. We call it in Ezo Makoman. We call that Oshem Asham Xelus. It's not strictly speaking only for Xela. It's for any kind of case where a person has in his possession money or assets that belong to somebody else, and he's swearing falsely on it. So one of those cases would be a Shomer with a Pekadin. Another one would be a Ganav or a Gazlan. Anyway, the point is that. So if the Gazlan himself swears falsely that he didn't steal it, and later on he's ready to do tshuva, then he has to pay a keren v'choymesh v'asham. But now, when we learn the words asher gozal, that he stole, is l'mo'oti gezel aviv. That comes to exclude where it was stolen by his father. She'enim moisif choymesh, he would not have to add a choymesh for the gezel of his father. So his father had stolen and sworn falsely about it, and then the father died before he had the chance to pay. So the son is going to have to pay the keren, but he's not going to have to pay the choymesh. We're going to discuss these dinim in detail later in the Masechta. The point is, we're learning the word Asher Gozal. We're learning that from the word Asher Gozal. How can Rav Chista use the word Asher Gozal to teach us about if the Gezel is still in its original state versus it's not? The answer is, in Cain, if that was all the Pasuk wanted to teach us, Nichter Rahmana, Beheshev es Gzela Yashad Gozal, then it could have said, it didn't have to say Beheshev es Hagzela, it could have said es Gzeloi, his Gezel. Asher Gozal, it could have said Asher Les Gzeloi, his Gezel, and that would have been enough to understand that it means his Gezel rather than the one that his father stole. Asher Gozal, Lomali Lamichtav, why does it say Asher Gozal? Shmami Notarity, therefore we're able to learn both things. We're able to learn that it means that since it says Veheshev Esak Gzela rather than Gzeloi, then therefore we can learn both. It means that it's only when he himself stole Veheshev Esak Gzela that we return the Gzela, only when it's still intact and when there was no shinri in it. And Asher Gozal, that this concept of paying a Choymish applies only when he himself stole it and not when his father stole it. And Maoshal has a little bit of a different girsa that the Pasuk could have said. The Pasuk could have just said Beheshev es Hagzela. The Maoshal has a slightly different girsa that the Pasuk could have said Beheshev es Hagzela, and instead it says Beheshev es Hagzela. And the fact that it says Asher Gozal. So in other words, we're learning both that it could have said Gzela and it says Hagzela, and the fact that it says Asher Gozal. Okay. So that's one version. The Ikadam, the others say a different version of what Rav Chista said. Amar of Chista Amar of Yenison, Minayin L'Shinui She'ena Koine. According to the second version, Reb Chista is saying exactly the opposite. How do we know that a Shinui is not Koine? Because the Pasuk says, Veheshavas Agzela, implying no matter what state Agzela is in, even if there's a Shinui in it, then nevertheless it's not Koine for him. Now, Tosfos earlier points out we did have the Machlokas B'Shamay B'Shillel on the subject of Shinui, and certainly Rav Chista is not going to disagree with B'Shillel. So Tosfos explained over there that there's a difference between Shinui Achozer L'Briyosei and Shinui She'en Achozer L'Briyosei, where it's an irreversible change. For example, B'Shillel had talked over there about a case of wheat that was ground up into flour, where you're never making it back into wheat, whereas Rav Chista is talking about a Shinui Achozer L'Briyosei, a reversible Shinui. Okay, so the Gemara says, "V'haksiv asher gozal." What do you mean? What about the words asher gozal in the pasuk? And the answer is, "Ahumi boilei agzele shaloi moisif chemish ve'in moisif chemish al gezel aviv." According to the second version, we're learning only from asher gozal that he doesn't pay a chemish for his father's gezel. Unlike in the first version, where we said we're learning from the fact that it could have said gzeloi, and it says gzela, and it says asher gozal. In the second version, we're not doubtioning like that. We're just saying we learn from asher gozal about his father's gzela versus his own. And therefore, according to this version, a shinui, or at least a reversible shinui, as Tosfos says, would not in fact be coined for him. There does end up being a machlokas rishonim about certain details of the shinui that were of what kind of shinui we're going to say over here that is coined for him. Further on, we're going to talk about something. That Rav Papa says on the subject at the end of the sugya, and we're going to say, in other words, that so the Rif and the Rosh bring that in fact a reversible shinui, a shinui achozer l'briyosei, is not considered a shinui. And the Rambam brings similar concepts that, for example, a person we talked about yesterday, a person stole pieces of wood and nailed them together to make a box, then that's not considered a shinui because all you have to do is take out the nails and it's still the same pieces of wood that it was before. And then there's a machlokas. What about if there's a reversible shinui plus yirsh? Is that enough to acquire for him? Is that enough? So that there's a machlokas on, and Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions on the subject, and you have some discussion about that. Okay, continues the Gemara. Oma ula minayim liyirsh she'ena koneh. How do we know, says Ula, that Yush alone, when the owner gives up hope of ever getting the thing back, how do we know that by itself that's not Koine? Shenema, because the Pasuk says the Navi criticizes the Jewish people. This is the Navi Malachi at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, is criticizing them for different things that they're doing wrong. And one of them is, he says, you're bringing unsuitable animals for Korbanos. And he says, Shenema, va'avesim gozul, you're bringing stolen animals. And you're bringing animals that are lame or that are sick, and you're bringing them as korbanos. So why is he mentioning together stolen as well as lame or sick? We learn from that gozel drumyo to piseach. So Ula says, as far as korbanos, then it means that what's stolen is comparable to what's lame. Mapiseach to less than takanta klal. When an animal is lame, there's no way of making it kosher again. That's a permanent mum. Af gozel the less than takanta. Therefore, gozel also. There's no way of fixing it up, and it remains also as long as it's gozel. Now, to be sure, Tosfos says, if there was an actual shinui in it, we had before, we stole a baby sheep and eventually it grew into a ram, that would be different. But we're talking about as long as it remains in its original state, then yirsh by itself, we're saying, and Ula says, we can derive from the pasuk, loishna lifnei yirsh, v'loishna achar yirsh. So it wouldn't matter before or after yirsh, that either way, it remains also as a korban. Now, Tosfos has a long discussion over here that there seem to be other places where Ula himself says that Yirsh is koine. So first Tosfos starts discussing that maybe, according to Rabbeinu Tam, Ula is only talking about the dinim of korbanos. It's specifically possible. We might say that Yush is Kona in other contexts, but as far as bringing it as a korban, Ullah's going to say not on the grounds of mitzvah bar bave. Then Tosfos goes on to discuss. The Re, in turn, has a couple of questions on Rabbeinu Tam's explanation, and he ends up saying that actually no, what it is we are talking about that Yush that it is true that according to Ullah Yush is not Kona at all, and he explains those various Gemaras that Tosfos brings in other ways. What it is on the contrary, the Re says if Yush was Kona, then we wouldn't call it a mitzvah bar b'aveira anymore. The Re learns that when do we call it a mitzvah bar b'aveira? Only when it's still not his at the time he wants to do the mitzvah with it. Once it becomes his, and if we were to say that Yush makes it his, then mitzvah bar b'aveira wouldn't apply anymore. He does say maybe it's different with brachas. We have at the beginning of the ninth perek of our Masechta, we're going to talk about a person stole wheat and made bread out of it. He's not allowed to make a bracha on it. It's called a vitzeya berech niyetz Hashem. The robber, when he makes a bracha, is blaspheming Hashem. So the Re says maybe a bracha is different. Maybe a bracha to mention Shem Shemayim on it, you have to be more machmir. And then he gives other answers as well. But he goes on to discuss. And this whole point that maybe mitzvah bar b'aveira is only called that only when he's, for example, we just said before, the case where he's kona because he was makdish it, then we would say that's called a mitzvah bar b'aveira. But here, where there was yush first and he was kona, and now he wants to be makdish it, the Re says maybe that would be possible. Maybe Ullah is not talking about that case. So that's all one way of so that's how Ullah learns that such an animal is possible for a korban. Rava Amar Mehacha. Rava says you have a different source for this concept that that Yush does not acquire the animal for him and he can't be makdish it as a korban because the pasuk says korban noi. We learned this before. The pasuk says his korban, meaning v'loy hagazel. And we learn from that a stolen korban is not accepted. Now, so before we discussed this on Samach Vav Amud Beis, and we talked about when exactly did the person steal it. If it was before Yush, then of course there's no chiddush that he can't bring it as a korban. We have to be talking about after Yush. So we had that discussion over there. And Rava had said that not necessarily it could mean that he stole an animal that was already designated as a korban. So here Rava says, Rava is saying, Amos, when are we talking about? Ilema lifnei Yush. Are we talking about that he wants to bring a korban before Yush? Of course, pshita, of course he can't. Lomali kro, you wouldn't need a posik to tell us it's not his. El alav la'achar Yush. Therefore, it must be talking about after Yush. Ushmamina Yush leikoni. And therefore, that shows that Yush is not kona. So the Gemara says, Shmamina. Well, that proves it. That's a proof that Yush is not kona. Again, maybe not across the board. Tosfos, that's what Rabbeinu Tam and the Re are discussing in Tosfos. Do we mean that Ullah and Rava are talking across the board, or are they talking about only as far as the dinim of Karbanos? But the Gemara says, Rava hu de Omar de Gaza Korban de Chavre. Didn't Rava himself, when we brought up this point, Korbanu v'loi ha-gozel, in the earlier sugya on Samach Vav Amud Beis, Rava himself was the one who said that no, the Braisa is talking about a case not where we said that we're talking about where he wants to be makdashit la'acha Yush, but rather that it was before Yush, and that he wants to bring the korban that he stole an animal that was already a korban. And was saying that he's not koneh with Yush, but when he's makdish it after the fact, maybe he is. So Rava seems to be contradicting himself. So the Gemara says, Yiboseh Mahodobe. One possibility you could say is Rava changed his mind. First, he said we were talking about where it was already declared hekdish. Now he's saying that we're talking about that an animal that was holden when he stole it, and now he wants to make it hekdish. The other possibility is one of them was actually not Rava saying, but rather a papa. And the idea is how would such a mistake be made? How would something be attributed from a papa to Rava? Because Rapapa was a Talmud of Rava, and therefore, so he would say things stam, and people would assume that he got it from Rava. But in this case, it wouldn't be so. In this case, it would be something that Rapapa came up with independently or learned from one of his other Rabbein. Tosfos also points out over here that necessarily we have to be, now they're, apparently Tosfos had different gersois over here, whether this is Rava or Rabba talking in our piece over here. Tosfos says necessarily it has to be Rava, because in the earlier piece it was definitely Rava. We were using Rava was inferring what Rabba says, so there necessarily it has to be Rava. And since the Gemara is pointing out that on the face of it he's contradicting himself, then that means that here also it has to be Rava and not Rapa. Rava, and not Rabba. And again, that would explain how the mistake could come about that people thought that Rapapa's statement is actually Rava's, because Rapapa would say things in the name of his Rebbe, Rava, and or he would say things that he learned, and people would assume that he learned them from his Rebbe, Rava, which is not necessarily always the case. Fine. So now we've reached the end of the discussions of all the ins and outs of we were talking about Tashlumei Kefil, and then we were talking about the whole concept. We were talking the last couple of blocks about the whole matter of when exactly the Ganav acquires the thing itself and then only has to pay its value, as far as Yirush and Shinui Maisa and Shinui Hashem and all of that. So now we've gone through all of that. So to summarize, the last thing we said was Yirush by itself is not enough to be Koina. Tosfos again discusses, does that mean across the board or only for Korbanos? Shinui Maisa is enough to be Koina. Shinui Hashem, we said it depends. Shinui Maisa and Shinui Hashem, one thing we said it depends whether they're reversible, whether they're reversible. Can this Maisa be easily undone? For example, boards that are made into a box. Or with Shinui Hashem, for example, according to Reb Zeira, we have, let's say, a beam that was built into a building where all you have to do is take down the building and the beam resumes its name of a beam before that I had before. When you have any of those things with Yirush, then those can be koine. Yirush plus Shinui Maisa or plus Shinui Hashem, then those can be koine. And then the Ganav has to pay only the value of it, and that would be relevant to at the whole bit at the beginning. A couple of days ago, we talked about then in that case, after a permanent shinui in it, for example, an animal that grew up and now became a ram or now became a full grown ox, if now he were to shecht it, then we would say that he wouldn't pay the shlomi dalad behe, because now it's considered his own animal that he's shechted. Okay. So now let's start talking about Tashlumei Arba v'Chamisha. The Mishnah had said, "Umidas Tashlumei Arba v'Chamisha v'Chola." We said that the Mishnah had started by saying that Tashlumei Kefil apply across the board and for anything, as we worked out in the first couple of dafim of our perek, whereas Tashlumei Arba v'Chamisha apply only to sheep and cattle, respectively. So the Gemara says, why? Vamai neilaf shor mishabas. Why are we saying that it's limited only to those? Why don't we say that we should learn by gzera shava on the word shor from Shabbos? The same way as we learned at the end of the fifth parak, we talked about that there are dinim where the Torah says, for example, as far as an animal falling into a burr or an animal causing damage or whatever, where the Torah uses the word shor, and we learn by gzera shava from Shabbos that it applies not only to a shor but to any other kind of animal. Why don't we do the same thing over here? And say that even though the Torah mentions only the 4 or 5 penalty when it comes to a shirt, when it comes to an ox or a sheep, maybe in fact it applies across the board to anything else. We should say, at least we should say, just like by Shabbos, the issue of having your animal do malacha on Shabbos is not only on oxen and donkeys, that it says in the pasuk over there, but also chayav oif kayotz behen. Every kind of wild animal and every kind of bird is in the same category. Afkan chayav oif kayotz behen. The same thing over here, all wild animals and all birds should be included as well. And you should say that the 4 or 5 payment should apply to them as well. Now the Pnei Yeshua points out, after all, the Torah does say that you have 4 times for one and 5 times for the other. Well, then which one would you apply if you were to say it applied to all other animals? Then which one would you apply? Which one would you apply to them? The 4 or the 5? Like this. Later on in the parak, later on in the Perek, the Gemara points out a couple of reasons why. Indeed, why does the Torah make a lesser penalty for stealing a sheep than for stealing a than for stealing an ox? And the Gemara brings two reasons over there: one, because an ox is used for work, and two, because an ox, because a sheep you have to can there, and therefore, in other words, you caused a greater, therefore the ganav caused a greater loss to the owner, a loss of work. And the second reason is because with a sheep, the owner, the ganev, has the embarrassment of carrying it on his shoulder, whereas cattle walk by themselves. So the Pnei Yeshua says, if we were to say in our Gemara over here that we were to apply a tashlumi dalad vehe to other kinds of animals as well, then yeah, we would look for each one. We would say, for example, a donkey is used for work, and he doesn't carry it, therefore it would be fivefold. If, let's say, for example, he stole, if he stole one of those small dogs or whatever, then maybe he would pay only fourfold for those, because you don't use those for work, and because he has to carry them, etc. So that's what the Gemara is asking, is why don't we say that he should have to pay four or five times for any kind of animal? And the answer is, Amar Rava, Amar Krosh, Shervaseh Shnei Pamin. Because the pasuk says the word shurva set twice. It says if a person steals shur oiseh and he shechts and he sells it, so he pays five times for the shur and four times for the set. So it repeats the word shur and repeats the word set twice. Shurva set ain midiachrin aloy. Therefore, we learn from that this din applies only to to shurva set and not to any other animal. So Gemara says, Amri, well, we have to analyze that a little bit. Hey miyamter. So you're telling me, in effect, Rava, that there's an extra time that it says shervaseh in the pasuk, and you're saying therefore you can learn from that this concept that it's limited to only them. And Tosfos, by the way, points out, by Shabbos, it doesn't mention seh, so therefore, why does it have to say seh twice over here? You wouldn't think to learn Xeder Shavah on seh from Shabbos, because there's nothing by Shabbos that says the word seh. And fine, Tosfos says if it didn't say seh twice, then you would think that sure means that nothing else. You pay five, but there are other things that you pay for. So it has to say seh to tell us that no, seh is the only one that you pay four for. Anyway, the point is that... getting back to the Gemara, so Amri, hey miyater, which mention of Shurva said, the first one or the second one, are you saying is extra that we can learn this from? Ilema Shurva said to say for miyater, are you going to tell me that the ones at the end of the pasuk are extra? The nichtem rachmana, because the pasuk could have written ki yignev shurei se utvachoi and mecharoi chamisha bokei yishalom tachta va'arbatzayin tachtav. You're going to say the pasuk didn't need to repeat the word shur v'seh. It could have said he pays five instead of it, or four instead of it, without using the word shur or the word seh. The problem is you can't. If Hashem had written like that in the Torah, have I boy shalom tisha l'cholachem v'achod. Maybe it means chamisha boker yishalom tachta v'arba tzayin tachta. It means that when a person stole any one of them, he has to pay nine animals for each one. Maybe the Torah is telling us that if a person steals an ox, he has to pay back five oxen plus four sheep. So you wouldn't know that it's five for one versus four for the other. Now you would answer back, no problem, because it says tachtav separately for each one, and therefore that shows that one goes on the shur and the other one goes on the seh. The problem is that still doesn't work. Chad tachtav miyater, you can say, because one tachtav fine is extra, because ahumi boiler the drosh achrita, because you only have one tachtav that would be extra, because the other tachtav we actually need for a different drosha, the tanya. You would think, since the Torah is saying that he has to pay back five oxen if he stole an ox, so you would think if he stole an ox that's worth a mana, an enormous amount of money, yeshalom tachtam negidin, then it's enough if he pays back in place of it negidin, which means animals that are only that are fainting, animals that are weak and practically on the verge of death. Rashi explained the word, you have the word vayigva in several places in Pesukim where it talks about tzaddikim, the vayigva, like they expired and they passed away, and Targum Onkelos translates it ve'is negid. So therefore negidin would mean animals that are practically on the verge of death. So you would think that would be enough. So Talmud Lema, tachtav, tachtav. No, therefore the pasuk says tachtav twice tachas aser and tachas asher and tachas aser. So in order to tell us that you have to give, if you're going to pay with whatever it is you're going to pay with animals or with other or with animals or with money, you have to pay the full value of the animal, not just weak animals. So therefore, so now we have those. So we need the word tachtav. So fine. So now, if the pasuk had said so therefore you have so the tachtovs are so the word tachas asher and tachas aser are needed for both of them are needed to teach us this din to teach us and okay, Rashi says you could say one tachtov is used for another drosha and the other one maybe would actually mean that you still have to pay nine for each one. So the point is the Gemara is saying, so how do we know still so you can't say that the sher v'aser at the end of the pasuk are extra. You have to say the word sher and the word ser at the end of the pasuk, otherwise you're going to misunderstand. Either you're not going to know this din about negidim, or you're going to think that it means that if a person stole an ox, he has to pay back four oxen plus five oxen plus four sheep. So the Gemara says Ela Sherva said the Resha Miyater. So rather we can answer that no, it's the ones at the beginning of the pasuk that are extra. The miyuter are extra. The nichtav rachmana ki yignav ishu tvocho and mechore chamisha boker yishalom tachas asher va'abatzan tachas aser. The pasuk could have said like this: If a person steals and he shechts it or he sells it. Now, so far we don't know what the it is, but the pasuk continues that he has to pay five oxen instead of the ox and five oxen. Instead of the ox and four sheep instead of the set. So therefore, so instead, since the Torah mentioned sher and set at the beginning of the pasuk, then therefore we can use what Rava was saying to say that that's teaching us that this din is limited only to sher v'set. But the Gemara says no, that doesn't work. Because of Rachmana Hachi, if Hashem had written like that in the Torah, have Amina ad degun of trei v'tavachlu. Maybe you would misunderstand that it means that only if he shechted or stole two animals, because after all, you would say chamisha boker yishalom tachas asher va'arbat son tachas aser. You would say that it means because he stole and shechted an ox and a sheep, therefore he's chayev for both of them. How would you know that it applies only to one? The Gemara says that's no problem because the pasuk says he shechts it lachad. Still, the Gemara says ve'ema ad degon of tavayu umaz ben lahu. Fine. Maybe though it means he's chayev only if he sells both of if he steals two animals and sells both of them. And the answer is the same thing. It says he sold it, which means only one. So therefore, so fine. So you would understand. So far, the Gemara is saying, in other words, so you could have understood from the word utvachoy or mechoroy that we're talking about one animal. And then when the end of the pasuk says that you have to pay tachas asher or tachas aser, you would understand that it still means only for one animal. And therefore, you have a sher v'aser extra in the pasuk at the beginning of the pasuk, which tells us that that the din is limited only to sher v'aser. Still, the Gemara says, ve'ema hava amina. Still, you could argue that maybe if pasuk phrased it that way, you would say ad degonav tauti only if you stole both of them, but tovach chad or mazbin chad, and he shechted one and he sold the other one. So you would say, sure, it says tvachoy or mecharoy that he shechted an animal and he sold an animal. So maybe it means to begin with, he stole two animals. One of them he shechted, one of them he stole, one of them he sold, and that's when the pasuk is saying that he has to pay five oxen or four sheep. So how would you know that not? Doesn't it have to say sure and set in order to forestall that possibility? The answer is oy machore xiv. The answer is umachore xiv lachad. I'm going back over here on the lines. The answer is oy machore xiv, because the pasuk doesn't say that the and he sold it, it said or he sold it. So that makes it clear that's one or the other, not that he shechted one and sold the other, but that he shechted or he sold. Still, the Gemara says, Va'akati have amina ad gun of tavayu. Still, you could still argue that it means that he stole both of them. The tovachad or mashayachad, he shechted one and left over the other and didn't do anything with it. Or mazbin chad or mashayachad, or he sold one and left the other one for himself. Still, if the pasuk like this, when the pasuk tells us at the beginning of the pasuk, ki yignev ishur oise, then it's clear that it means that he stole one or the other. But if you're telling me the pasuk didn't have to write the word shor oseh, it could have just said kiyugnav ish without specifying, then we would say maybe the din applies only if he steals two animals. One of them he shechted and the other one he did not, or one of them he sold and the other one he did not, because it does say utvacha imachare. That would be when he's paying chamisha bakar or abatzar. How would we know that? How would we know that that applies even when he stole only one animal in the first place? So the Gemara says, Ella, shor d'seifa v'seh d'reisha miyater. Rather, the answer is like this. First, we tried to say that the shor and the seh at the end of the pasuk are extra. We said that's no good because we do, in fact, need to learn from that, that we do, in fact, if we didn't have the words shor and seh at the end of the pasuk, we would think that you have to pay nine animals or that you can pay weak animals. The ones in the ratio we said you can't either say are extra because we're saying after all you need to know you need to understand that we're talking about he stole only one animal, but what we're talking about over here so sure a sure to safer the said the ratio miyata. The answer is when it says sure the second time in the positive and when it says said the first time in the positive, those are the ones that are extra. And because the pasuk could have written like this, ki yignav ish shor, a person steals an ox, or tvachay umachare, and he shechts it or he sells it, chamisha baka yishalom tachtav, then he should pay five oxen instead of it. So it would say shor one time in the pasuk, and the second time it would say instead of it, and then it would add or four sheep in place of a sheep. And we understand, therefore, that the Torah is now telling us that the same thing applies to to a sheep. And Tosfos adds, of course, a svara would be obviously then the word chamisha bakar yishalom tachta would necessarily refer to the shur that it mentioned earlier in the pasuk. So it could have said it could have phrased it that way. Shur to say for the seder reishal mamali. Instead, it repeats the word shur yishalom tachas asher, and it said seh at the beginning of the pasuk, where we said it wasn't necessary because it could have just mentioned seh at the end of the pasuk, and we would have understood that that it applies to that. That it applies to that. Shiva shmamina shur v'seh ein midiachrin aloi. Therefore, ultimately, we can learn that it means that this concept of four or five times applies only to a shur and only to a seh and nothing else. So that is how we learn that this tashlumi above chamisha applies only to oxen and to sheep and nothing else. And we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem. We'll talk about the more of these dinim and more of these dinim of tashlumi kefil and tashlumi above chamisha.
Ashkeach.